This is Jazz Talk, presented by Melbourne International Jazz Festival. We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land and pay respects to their elders past, present and future, as well to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in the wider Melbourne community and beyond. We are honoured to contribute to over 60,000 years of music making, knowledge sharing and storytelling that has taken place on this land. I'm Chelsea Wilson, Artistic Associate of Melbourne International Jazz Festival Congress. This conversation, Beyond Words, presented in partnership with Multicultural Arts Victoria, was captured at the inaugural Congress in 2021 at Melbourne Recital Centre. One of the things that makes jazz so exciting is the quest for the new. Improvisation has long created a space for communication and collaboration where cultural boundaries dissolve. Across the last century, the worldwide expansion of jazz spawned new genres and sounds that fused contemporary and traditional practices with African-American culture. In this panel, some of Australia's most exciting artists examined the historical and cultural influences that have shaped modern jazz, blues, Latin jazz, desert blues, and more. Artists and speakers include saxophonist Solomon Cisse, percussionist Louis Poblete, chora master Jali Buba Kuyate, percussionist Netta Romani, pianist Romy Hernandez, bassist Arnold Lebon, and vocalist Seble Germa, moderated by artist and thinker Z Music. This is Beyond Words.
Good afternoon. Happy Saturday, everyone. So good to be able to share spaces like this in our physical form, given the last 2 years that we've had. So forgive me if I get a little emotional. This is a very, very important moment in Melbourne music history, as we'll be exploring a very interesting conversation, which is based around the influence of African cultures in what we are understanding to be modern jazz. But before I actually get into the conversation, I think it's important that I too acknowledge that the history that allows us to be able to experience moments like these is one that isn't as encouraging or as enlightening as we would wish. There are a group of people on these nations who took care of these lands for millions of years, who have been disabled and had a lot taken away from them in order for us to be able to experience this. And I too would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of these lands. And if there are any elders present with us, I would like to stand in solidarity for your fight. And what we are going to be talking about today is literally aligned with that struggle. Not to darken the mood, but it is important for us to be able to understand the origins of where the things that we experience come from. This helps shape the way we interact with those things. It helps shape the way we acknowledge our existence as a human race, and also kind of puts us on a path where we can afford each other the empathy required for us to be able to exist in an equitable way in this world that we live in. Now, I've got a very, very unique panel of artists that are here to have this conversation with me. On the far right, we've got Netta, who I've had a great amount of privilege to play on a few projects with. We share space on the MAV board together, and we have a friendship that's slowly brewing into something very, very powerful and dynamic, and I appreciate that. And then we've got Louis Poblete. I've gotten the opportunity of witnessing Louis play on a few different bands, and only recently have we actually connected and sat down and had conversation. And a very, very exciting, interesting artist. And I can't wait for you to hear what he has to share. Then we've got Seble Germa. Seble I only met as part of this particular panel preparation, and her story is very unique and extravagant. And once again, like the others, I can't wait for you to hear what she has to share. Romy, all the way from Cuba. She's an amazing artist. Studying something that's very interesting and studied something that's very interesting, which I won't give you too much because I really want you to be on the edge of your seats as we travel through this journey. Then we've got Arnaud Lebon. Arnaud and I have a very interesting relationship. He's not only my friend, but he's also my music teacher. You might see a bass in front of him right now, but he's actually more I guess, dynamic than the instrument suggests. And I can't wait for you to hear what he has to share and his journey. Then we've got Jali, who's got this beautiful instrument in front of them, which is the Kora instrument. Jali is one of many Melbourne-based artists that play this extravagant instrument. And I feel like this is one instrument that has almost been forgotten within the music scene. And on the far left there, we've got Solomon Sisse, amazing ethio jazz saxophonist, who will be joining us as well. Now, as the pamphlet suggests, we're going to be exploring the ideas that informed jazz music as we experience it today. My appreciation of music started at a very young age. I did not have any concept of what genres were. All I heard were sounds, and I listened and I enjoyed them. That informed the path that made me the artist that I am today. However, as I've journeyed as a musician, as a creative, I've realized that the world that we live in today, which is really an archetype as imagined by those that came before us, has now become limiting in our ability to be able to express and experience music in its various forms. Now, to start off the conversation, I'm going to take you back to a place in the U.S. called the Place Congo. History suggests that this is where jazz originated from. I'd like to challenge that thought and say that jazz was existing pre-slavery history. Jazz was in and amongst African cultures, African traditions, and one way in which we can start to tangibly experience what that looks like is by having a conversation about rhythm. Louis and Neda are amazing percussionists, as you can see the instruments in front of them. And I really wanted to start off by talking to Louis and ask the question, where do these rhythms originate from? Can you describe to us the evolution of the rhythms that were pre-slavery to what we're experiencing now within the jazz music scene?
Yeah.
So it's a very, very dense conversation.
Yeah. I guess my understanding is, you know, many years ago when people started playing these drums or similar drums, I guess in the Americas, it came with them, you know, rhythms and songs, which through time have kind of gradually changed, morphed into different things, which, you know, the hardware and everything is different to the original drum that came from Africa. Like, for one thing, these drums used to be tuned by a fire. You know, you have to light a fire to get the skin to go up, where now you can just, you know, modern age, you tune it with a key. The other drums in Cuba that they have, that they tuned with water, like the Lo Bongo from Santiago, they have to be moistened, wet, so they get tuned down. I guess, you know, yeah, so rhythms that they would have brought with them, you know, the clave would have come, and, you know, that now exists all over Latin America as well, you know, and, yeah, that's directly an African thing.
Yeah. You know. Can you illustrate to us what the clave sound would look like?
Yeah, there's... Oh, Neda can do it. She's got a clave. And then different variations of that, you know. So you've got that one, which is like the son one. Mm-hmm. Everything done the other way around. 2-3, 3-2, rumba clave. Then you've got your 6-8 claves. Yeah. Then you've got like your Brazilian ones. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, in Peru, they've got different ones as well.
Right.
There's all over Latin America, they're using variations of the same idea.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting because, like you mentioned, it is an idea that was time-stamped and then evolved as the music progressed.
And still is.
And still exists. Like, when we caught up, one of the most interesting things, we had this moment in Louis' lounge when I visited him as part of our preparation. And I asked him about Giovanni Hidalgo. And within a split second, Louis was on the percussion explaining how Giovanni evolved and changed the direction in which percussion was going within the era that he was playing in. And I'd love for you to illustrate that moment so that we can share it with the audience.
Yeah, I guess we were talking about, with the Giovanni example, we were talking about there's, you know, I think a lot of percussion instruments, there's the instrument before, and then there's kind of where it changed with how they brought in modern sticking technique onto the hands. You know, I think there was other players before, like, you know, I think these instruments were very linear at you know, then players like Tata Wine brought in this, that movement. Then others like Changuito brought in the idea of La Mano Secreta, which is that. Then Giovanni brought in the idea of, you know, the book Stick Control, which is, you know, most drummers know that book, and started, you know, bringing in all those rudiments, you know, like your paradiddles, you know, and moving them around. Now there's groups like, what are they called? Clave Wawanko, that are doing the same movement, which is just, you know, paradiddles moving around the drums.
Yeah.
Which, you know, which those things didn't exist.
Didn't exist before. And we've probably experienced some of these outside of the congas as well, as other musicians start to hear these ideas and adapt them to their own instruments. And definitely. I really want to find out and have a conversation with Neda for a few minutes here and say, in African music, as I know it, there are these elements of the music that exist. Now, obviously, language has barriers, so we have to borrow from the English language in order for us to explain what these are. And we often talk about rifts. I think the Latin term for it is ostentino. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I pronounced that correctly. Mm-hmm. But are you able to explain how these rifts and repetitive patterns have traveled around the world? And
Yeah, so my experience of these rhythms and playing with Louis and other artists around is from an Afro-Brazilian perspective, and Louis's influence in the music and rhythms that we create and riff on comes also from the Afro-Cuban, I think. Is that right, Louis? Afro-Cuban and Latin Americas also. And I like to cast my mind even back before they got to Louis and us and a few generations before us, where they were possibly coming from the many countries in Africa before even slavery, so back way back into Mandingo Empire, even, thank you, Jali, I'm getting a nod from Jali, just making sure I'm getting this right. So way back into Mandingo Empire, or even just maybe Yoruba traditions, where even like this fabric here is a very modern fabric. It's got fashion on it, but if you look at the original Yoruba fabrics, you can see symbols of the music, symbol of the instruments, symbol of the calls, the voicings, and those Yoruba traditions got passed down through the calls, the voicings in the rhythms, through the traditions, through the food, through the dance, through the art, through spoken, I think it's mostly spoken traditions or played traditions, but it may have been notated also. We'll hear more from Jali soon, I'm sure. But yeah, to see that evolution go, and in my experience, when I learnt in Brazil for the time that I spent in Brazil, I learnt that those traditions are directly coming from Yoruba descendants in Brazil. So Yoruba is a massive ethnicity group, absolutely massive still, and the descendants of all that is absolutely massive. Even in Australia, I'll have some family come to my house and go, I recognise that fabric, this is the rhythm, da-da-da. Yeah. So, yeah, and those riffs that you speak of usually are with voicings, and I even hear it in modern jazz singers' voices when they start up a track or call in a track, they'll copy those voicings. And so, you know, maybe a 6-8 voicing might be karakadukudukudukul, but it would sound like this between Louis and I. We're not jazz singers, but we would go. And we know where we're starting, where we're finishing, how long the phrase goes for. Bit of a conversation, a bit flexible. But then they've also got, especially in Brazil, with the Afro-Brazilian cultures, which came out of the single-stick saba drumming from Yoruba culture again, unfortunately brought to Brazil via slavery. The only good thing that came out of that was the strong samba tradition celebrating the end of that. But these calls were originally done on, like Louis was saying, drums previous to the industrial age, without lugs, more tuned with water and fire, as in Anu's culture too, and Mauritian cultures also tuning all those drums in the fire. But previous to the industrial age, these were done with a single stick and a hand, and you'll see that a lot in Brazilian music. You'll see all of the calls are called in, and they aren't so short. They can be longer. With the Afro-Brazilian ones are more like... get us into the riff, basically. It's how we're going to get in, who's going to call it. And in jazz music, I hear the singers doing that with their voices. And if there's no singer, it's often a horn player or a section leader doing those voicings. But my impression is that when I was learning these rhythms, which are largely influenced by Yoruba culture, I am hearing the same thing. And I haven't operated a lot in the jazz space, more in the world music space. Thank you for inviting me into the jazz space, see? And thank you to MAV and also the Recital Centre, the Jazz Festival, for inviting this conversation into the jazz space. Usually we wouldn't be talking with jazz terms like that, but we would just be calling each other and creating the music and improvisation.
And that's very, very interesting. First of all, thank you, Louis and Neda, for an amazing discussion. It's really interesting that you, Neda, you mention the voicings, because usually, and this to me presents the challenge that I have with the limitations of the English language. So when I hear voicings, I'm thinking about the vocal expressions. But within other cultures and traditions, voicings could mean what is being played on those instruments. And that might just be because of my limited access to the English language. But it's important to acknowledge that, because then it opens your mind to what the rest of the world interprets when they're playing their instruments and how they experience the music as that whole. So thank you very much
You're
for
welcome,
sharing that.
Z.
And with that in mind, we'll move on to the next section, where I'll have the amazing opportunity to talk to a vocalist, Seble Germa. when I caught up with Seble, we had a brief conversation around how she got into music. And I don't really want to spoil it, but I will get Seble to share with us very briefly, how did you get into music and what's your journey been like so far?
I'll get into music first. Thank you for having me here on the stage. It's been a while for me. And thank you, the Melbourne International Jazz Festival and MIVs. How I became a singer is just as a young child. I used to sing at church, like as gospel, which is interesting. It's completely different than singing in the world. So it wasn't like singing on the stage. It's just in the church only. I was trying to be a singer, which is at school we do things at the end of the year when we finish school. Every year we have like performance. They have mini-medias, mini theater and music bands. Like, it's not supported by anybody, but the kids just make a just a little group and sing. So I did force myself to join one of the school mini-medias. And then I went there and I told them I can sing. They were like, they check. And I never sing normal songs before. So they said, okay, we can give you just one song for the day. And my family didn't know because it's especially for girls. It's shame. Mm-hmm. It's not a culture for us to go out in the world and sing. It's really against the culture. So I tried to break. I did it, which is my mom and my dad didn't know. on the day, they just came to, they have to come and see like parent-teacher interviews, and they see some different performance, but they didn't know I was going to perform. But I did have a chance to perform in front of my mom. That was a big war. Yeah, I know what's going to happen when I go back home, but I did. It was just only one song, but I have a chance. The world see my singing just with that just one song, like 5-3 minute singing. It was all over the TVs, medias. So the next day I get called from the children theater. They want me to join them. So I did went and I have my audition. I go through, become, just got one step forward to perform on the stage. So I did my performance, my first performance on Ethiopian New Year, which is, was exciting for me. And they used to pay me about 7th Ethiopian birr, which is, I don't know how much. Probably. I don't know. It's just like maybe $5 or less. Yeah. But I was so excited this to be, not to become as a singer, as a professional singer. But my, it was too fast for me. I grew a lot. So quick, it was fast growing as a young artist, performer. So I get a chance to go everywhere. That was 27 years ago, maybe 26 years ago. So I get called from children, TV programs, different organization. So I did have a chance to join circus, and there is a program which is run by a German organization, which is Save Your Generation. In Africa, there is HIV issue. So there was a group which is teaching the society how to control HIV virus in Africa. So I joined that group. So I have to sing about HIVs and then acting and stuff. So I start traveling around the country. It was too hard for my family to accept it. But once I have to make a decision, I have to make a choice, singing or family. I was about 12 or 13, and then I said, I can't give up on my singing, I'm going now. And they become, because the culture, the society is avoiding my family because I become a singer.
Right.
It's against the culture where I grew up. So my family said, no, you cannot do it, or you have to
leave.
I don't know where to go. I said, okay, let me think about it. And then in that movement, I joined Circus Ethiopia, which is one of the biggest group in Addis Ababa. So when you join the circus, when you start performing in circus, you have to travel a lot. But I don't think, am I allowed? So I have to make a decision. And my older sister and my mom said, make a decision. I said, my singing. I have to take a risk.
Yep.
So I have to leave the house, leave the family. I just left the family, but I don't know where to go. It's just my singing. And my sister said, no, you cannot do this. You're still young, and you cannot leave the family. I said, okay, I'll stay home, but I don't think I can stop singing. They said, no, if you stay home, you have to stop, because it's against the culture. And the church become against me as well. Instead, singing for God, you are singing that. So it's hard for my family to accept that. So I did stay home for a bit, and when my mom sleep, jumped over the window. So it was a lot of a big challenge. So they can't do nothing at the end. So they have to let me go. And so I become more known in the country. So start traveling around the world, the city. I mean, in the country first, but I get big names. So start a year. Just get international music festivals in Europe. So I did join the international music festival in France for the first time. There was a lot of artists from Ethiopia. There was a connection between Ethiopia and France. Some other things. I wasn't even sure because I was young. And all I want just go and perform. So I went, and the festival was competition. So I won for the first time. That was international music festival. So I won. I and my family get oh, you can do it.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Suddenly so, the themes change.
And you make them proud mm-hmm. while you're struggling still. So I have to be like in and out, and I have to study at the same time. And then traveling around the world was a bit tough with mm-hmm. the school and family. Still, there is a pressure. Mm-hmm. So if you get like on your result, if you get a bit low, you're going to be, that was going to be your end of performance, so you have to stop. Mm-hmm. So I have to struggle with it. So just going on and on. So I started traveling the world and then came to Australia in 1998 for the Walmart Adelaide Festival, which is, that was a big one for me. I was traveling about 10, 11 European countries before that. So because of my situation in Ethiopia, it's just my family, I was young, so I need to decide to stay back. When I stayed back, still it was hard for me to work in my profession because no English at all. I don't have even a word of it. Mm-hmm. And then different culture, different people. But I did force myself to join a group in Footscray Art Centre, which is they have multicultural art. Multicultural choir group. Mm. I did join them. There was fun, which is I don't understand what they were talking about, but they was interested on me. They want me to explore myself, like they want me to sing with them because they know I don't speak English or can sing English. Mm. So they pushed me to teach them my own language in singing. So the first time I did and teach them with a translator, they was in. Person who translate my language and I teach a song. That was a huge performance for me and the choir full choir, but 70 people in that choir. Mm. It was a big, huge performance.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I did work. Since then, I did start working with Multicultural Art Victoria, which is my big fun still.
Yep.
Yeah, around Australia. And then I work with the biggest is TESO, which is Tasmanian Symphony Orchestra. Mm-hmm. And I have my own band, Jazz Murray's, and I used to perform with Hafra Habesha as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, my music history comes just like that. As I started when I was 6, 7, as a choir in a church, which is, that's all about it.
And it's crazy to hear such an amazing story that had so many ups and downs, but here you are sharing this space with us.
Yes.
And I mean the reason I asked Sebele to share her story is because often when we interact with music, we only see the end product of what that is, but without really acknowledging the journey. And to re-emphasize that we are living in a construct that has become restrictive rather than enabling, stories like this then don't get given the opportunities to exist on platforms such as these unless organizations like Multicultural Arts Victoria and Melbourne International Jazz Festival start to interact and intersect. And what that does is it opens up the industry to allow for musicians as talented as Sebele to come into those spaces and start to share their stories without really being restricted by language, similar to what Footscray Community Arts Centre allowed her to do, share her story but using her language, and allow the choir that was there to experience and accept that language as it is. And it's important for us to hear these stories and evolve beyond the limited thinking that the genres that we exist in have kind of imposed on us. But I want to have a chat with Romy, and Romy has a very interesting journey with her music. Originally from Cuba, came out here to study music, and as a result of her coming out here, she started to look at Cuban music from a different lens. And what was interesting was the sentiment was pretty much the same as what Neda and Louis have mentioned. It was really centered around the West African influence on a specific music genre, timba music. Mm-hmm. Romy, would you like to share a little bit about your thesis and what you came across?
Sure. I feel so lucky after hearing your story. It's like, well. Well, I was classical trained in Cuba, so I came here, and I started getting into jazz after hearing what is today one of my favorite albums, I have to say. An album called by Barney McCall, which is, you know, it's called Mother of Dreams and Secrets or something like that. Yeah, Mother of Dreams and Secrets. And I remember driving my car and I had Fiesta Jazz, which is runs on Saturdays. And I heard this music with batar drums and it's got this just very heavy percussion ensemble and with all this, but it's just jazz and it's this beautiful harmony. And I just felt so, wow, it resonates with me. This feels so familiar, but also so, like, you know, so different from what I'm used to. It's just interesting, but, like, that just really make me just wanted to know more about, not only about Barney McCall music, but also about, yes, what these old drums and all these rhythms were coming from. And then I have to look back. Of course, it sounds familiar because it's all based on the Yoruba music that is performed in Cuba these days. It just blew my mind, like, how just coming here to Australia, so far from my country, and I just found this. And it was so, like, the perfect mix of Cuban and Australian music, so for me it was kind of like that. Make me not only that, but all the things around that were happening at the time. Just went to VCA and studied over there. And one of the last things I did when I did honors, I had to do a thesis, and I did it in like some similar subjects, like just taking some of those Yoruba rhythms and chants, and just writing music around those rhythms and chants. Yeah, so that kind of like opened up all the avenues for me as well. We're just studying like some of those songs I wrote for that particular thesis. They're morphed into other styles and other rhythms, and I just brought it to a timba band, which is a different style of Cuban music that is what I perform more these days. Got an 11-piece band, which Louis part of course.
11-piece, wow.
That's pretty much in a nutshell the kind of like the journey of like coming from this country and just coming here, and it's like, whoa, hang on a second, I have to look back now.
That's it.
It's very interesting because a lot of musicians, even myself, when you enter a different context, you look back at your home and you go, whoa, I was missing out on all these things.
Exactly.
And it's interesting because there's parallels to that story within the Australian music scene as well. I've learned in my journeys as a musician that in order for you to get a successful career in the Australian market, you probably need to get some sort of international recognition before you can actually make an equitable income within the market. And it's always interesting hearing it from the other side, where as an immigrant, you come out to Australia, you experience the music scene here, and that makes you look back home and go, wow, like, we had something going on there. I see that as an opportunity. Yeah. I think it's an opportunity within the Australian landscape to explore these different rhythms. And I think it would be good if you could showcase some of the stuff that you came up with when you were doing your thesis.
Sure.
If you could play us a piece.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say I'm not going to play a piece because it's just for a whole ensemble, but one of the chants I took from this Yoruba culture that I experienced in Cuba, because I believe it's different in Nigeria and in Africa these days. It was a chant dedicated to the god of goddess of love and rivers and Koloshun, and the chant goes like something like Iyamile, Odo. That's the chant, and I just did, and just kind of like make it like groovy. Something like that.
Feel free to jump in, Seb, like, and see you're like, ooh.
Please, just accompany, please.
Mm-hmm.
ستير سكت لا عادي ستير سكت لا فكر لبشاه وارقبني من الباب ستير سكت لا ستير سكت لا ستير سكت لا يغير ما
That's amazing. That is it's always interesting as a musician what it feels like to be in a studio setting. The type of energy that exists when musicians that don't naturally speak the same language come into a space and communicate through their instruments and create a new sound is a very unique experience. And this is an illustration of what that is. We've got possibly four different cultures coming together and responding to what they hear with their ear, because music is a universal language. The challenges that we face, though, as musicians, is some of us don't have access to the English language, much like myself. I'm able to stand here and speak and respond to conversations. And so we use our instruments to tell our stories. Our instruments don't have genres. Our instruments don't have marketing strategies. They just exist as they are. And we respond to the calling that comes with those instruments. And to explore this idea, I really want to have a conversation with Arno. When we caught up, Arno, you made a very interesting statement, and I'll leave you to make the statement yourself. But really, explain to us like the ideas and the thinking that comes as a musician, as is separate to somebody that listens to music.
I don't really want to make a distinction between musicians and music listeners, because hopefully musicians are listeners too. I think. One question that I get asked a lot, as soon as somebody knows, oh, I'm a musician, so what genre of music like do you specialize in? And it's kind of difficult for me to answer that, because it requires me to put myself in a box. But as a listener, I love the Police, I love the Beatles, I love everything from there to hard rock to... I'm trying to open my mind. And so we've had lots of different examples of how grooves can go. But me, in order to work, I need to understand where the beats could go. So I'm just going to get you to do one thing for me. So there's these rhythms in music. So the way we divide out a measure is 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. And if you want to divide that even more in smaller parts than that, you'd be using the 1 and a 2 and a 3 and a 4 and a 1 and a 2 and a 3 and a 4. And could you keep that up for me?
And a 1 and a 2 and a 3 and a 4 and a 1 and a 2 and a 3 and a 4 and a 1 and a 2 and a 3 and a 4 and a 1 and a 2.
As a bass player, depending on which groove I'm playing, I might be required to place the beat in 16 different spots.
3 and a 4 and a 1 and a 2 and a 3 and a 4 and a 1 and a 2 and a 3 and a 4 and a 1 and a 2 and a 3 and a 4 and a 1 and a 2 and a 3 and a 4 and a 1 and a 2 and a 3 and a 4 and a 1 and a 2 and a 3 and a 4 and a 1 and a 2 and a 3 and a 4 and a one and a two and a three and a four and one and a two and a three and a four, you know, one and a two and a three and a four and a one and a two and a three and a four, one and a two and a three and a four and a one and a two and a three and a four and a one and a two and a three and a four and a one and a two and a three and a four and a one and a two and a three and a four and a two and a three and a four and one and a two and a three and a four, you know, one and a two and a three and a four, one and a two and a three.
There you go. That was all of them. So I did the three backwards. Sorry about that. But the ability to rise above everybody else in terms of who's going to get the gig is to find those things easy.
Yeah.
So in order to I really have to look at music this way. So when you look at it with these lenses, you don't really see genres anymore.
Yeah.
You just see divisions.
Divisions. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, just to summarize what you just said, mm-hmm. Music essentially has a tempo and a beat.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I always like to say, as long as your heart beats, you've got a rhythm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know that our heart beats at, what is it, 36 BPM?
Well, it depends who you are.
I think so. I think it's roughly average of about 36 BPM. And if I'm incorrect, Google will help you.
Right.
but that's literally what music comes with. It's a pulse. Okay. It's a rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And within those rhythms, like you said, you can choose to play the rhythm in different parts of where that pulse is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very unique how that works when you're moving across different genres. Because essentially you could have the same bass line played differently, but it's still the same bass line. It might be good for you to illustrate what that would sound like if you're open to it.
Right, sure.
And maybe we'll get some help so that I'm not one ear and a two ear and a three ear and a four ear. Maybe we'll get some help from the percussion to set like some sort of tempo and some rhythm. And yeah, feel free to jump in, everyone, if you wanted to move between the the beats.
Right. So let me get this right. So you just want us to come up with something right
come
now?
Come up with something. And we'll move between the interpretations of what that something is. But just come up with something first, and then we'll have a conversation.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, cool. So...
Okay. So now I'm gonna put you on the spot, if that's okay.
Sure.
I'm gonna put you all on the spot. We're gonna play the same bass line, but with a different feel.
Yep.
There we go. All right, and then I'm going to challenge the percussionist for a second while you're still playing. Let's illustrate what we were talking about in terms of the evolution of the different percussion styles and showcase what that looks like in the context of the music that's playing at the moment. So this is old school Yoruba. Thank you. Oh, there we go. Yeah. I want to take this moment to first of all say thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to share our stories. Now, as you can appreciate, 60 minutes is probably not enough for us to cover the depth of knowledge that is covered here. And I really wanted to have this conversation as a starting point, as the beginning of a new opportunity for us to explore the different ideas and the different concepts that exist within the musical landscape. I've been on a journey myself with music. I've explored and listened to a lot of American jazz. I've listened to a lot of jazz that's coming out of Europe. And I really have this belief that if we as the Melbourne music scene looked internally and identified these amazing talents that exist within our culture, we could have a sound that is very unique to the Melbourne culture. One that represents the diversity and the talent that comes here and takes opportunity of all these amazing things that we have here. I think it is sad to hear that some of these artists don't actually play the genres that speak to their own hearts in order for them to be able to survive within the music scene. And as an audience, as an audience that listens and appreciates this music, we really would love for you to support and start to talk about these different elements of music, not in the language that was used here, but more in how we listen to what's out there. I'd love to be able to see next year this amazing band showcase some written music and really allow us to appreciate a new sound that could come out of the Melbourne scene. But before I leave, I'd like to spend the last 5 minutes allowing these musicians to play. I did want to have a bit of a question and answer session, but unfortunately time doesn't allow us. But I'm going to walk off stage and say thank you. Enjoy the rest of the Melbourne International Jazz Festival. Be sure to check out something that is different to what you're used to. And I'm going to allow the musicians to take on and showcase their amazing talent. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much to these amazing, one more time for the amazing musicians. We've got Solomon Sisse on saxophone, Jali Buba Kuyate on choro, Arnold LeBon on the bass, Romeo Hernandez on the piano, Seble Germa, vocals, Louis Poblete, percussion, and the amazing Neda on percussion as well. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day.
That was Beyond Words at Melbourne International Jazz Festival Congress, presented in partnership with Multicultural Arts Victoria. Please keep in touch with Melbourne International Jazz Festival by subscribing to our e-news at melbournejazz.com. Follow us on social media and subscribe on your preferred platform for more podcast episodes. We would like to thank Principal Partners Creative Victoria and the Australia Council, the Vizard Foundation, the RISE Fund, an Australian Government Initiative, the Helen McPherson Smith Trust, and the US Consulate.